welcome to Medi-Call episode 197. I'm Corey and here's Daryl.
Yo.
Yo. We took a week off last week. I was camping. I went up in the woods and we did some whitewater rafting. And I apologize for the inconvenience of a week without magic news, but there wasn't really a lot happening, as you know, news has been rather slow recently because we haven't had two or three sets being spoiled in the last 2 weeks.
But Corey, I blame you for lack of news, but while we were gone, there was news that there would be a banning today.
Yeah.
I was the only one doing anything magically related. I actually got to play some in real life magic with some people. The card shops are open around here, but I sold most of my modern decks. Yeah. So unfortunately I don't have those right now, but I did get to have the boys over.
Nice.
Because the house cleared out. So we got to have a good old time doing that. A little commander action, a little bit of food.
I've been playing some cards again lately too. I took some time off of Magic, to be honest with you, because I've been kind of like burned out on, we had some discussions about just the outrageous cost of MTGO, and I felt like I was just kind of priced out of Magic Online lately, you know, without the wonderful service that is ManaTraders.com, of course, that allows you to play anything you want. We should mention wonderful sponsor that we have, ManaTraders.com. Promo code ModernMedical, all one word, no hyphens at checkout, gets you 14% off your first 3 months. But the game as a whole and the state of the game had me kind of turned off to the whole thing, and I'd kind of taken some time away from it to do other things. But rather recently, I got back into it and started playing with the red-black goblins deck in Modern. Because I couldn't stay away from a creature toolbox deck that involves a combo element to it. How could I say no to that?
You could not avoid Snoop Dogg, you say.
Snoop Dogg. That deck is the real thing, man. The combo is a little flimsy because it's very transparent when you're going to do it. You have to put the Snoop out in play and allow it to just kind of sit there for a turn sometimes. But you do have the option of giving it haste with some of the chieftains, which is kind of intensive, but
it's as transparent as, oh, I put my Devoted Druid in play.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
Like, that's how transparent it is.
This one,
Devoted Druid.
This one has the option of like sneaking into play with an Aether Vial, or even better, like has the discard package in the, you know, on the one drop slot to kind of ensure some more success. But the beatdown plan on this deck is the real deal. I mean, if you're going Goblin Chieftain stuff, I think Goblin Chieftain is the one that gives them +1/+1 in haste, right?
That is the one. Yeah.
That adds up quickly. There's a lot of damage to be dealt. And having 4 copies of Harbinger, 4 copies of Matron, you can find a lot of these singleton goblins, such as like Goblin Pile Driver, to just, you know, load up on the damage very, very quickly. So plan B of just attack them to death is very real.
I think the big key is all of the reach you get from Sling Gang Commander. Like, between having, I'm pretty sure Sling Gang is a 2/2, so having 4 power,
it's a 1/1.
4 mana. Oh, it's a 1/1. Okay, mm-hmm. So 3 power with 4 mana is not great, not a great rate. But then getting to drain 3 every time, you know, every time they potentially kill it. On top of just like random games where you don't full combo them with Kiki Jiki. But just like have a board of like 4 or 5 goblins, and then you draw and you have a Snoop in play, and you just flip over Sling Gang Commander, and all of a sudden the math just gets atrocious for your opponent.
Yeah.
Because you can offer your goblins up in an attack and threaten to get some points through that way, force them to block or use removal and have the Sling Gang effect. And then if they don't kill your Snoop, main phase 2, you can just cast aforementioned Sling Gang and get some more goblins and finish them that way.
Yeah, man, Sling Gang Commander, obviously the win condition of the deck, is just a very real, finisher if you are doing the damage plan too. Post-combat, finish them off. It is oftentimes the one that I'm tutoring up to, you know, deal that last like 6 or 7 damage when they've got blockers for, you know, what feels like kind of puny goblins against a lot of big blockers in the late game. But most importantly, when your opponent is doing something like Wormcoil Engine, having access to like a sac outlet like that is really important so that they don't get that life gain and start to stabilize when you've, you know, almost got them dead. For those that aren't familiar, the combo is Conspicuous Snoop has the activated abilities of all the goblins on top of your deck. So Boggart Harbinger puts a Kiki Jiki on top of your deck, which can target a non-legendary creature. Normally, Kiki cannot target itself because it is a legend, but Snoop is not a legend. So Snoop can target itself, make infinite copies of itself. The last copy that you make, which, you know, after you've made 100 copies, targets the Boggart Harbinger that was originally played to then put a Sling Gang Commander on top of your deck. And then since all of your copies are tapped, you can't attack with them, but you can sacrifice them all to deal damage to your opponent. So oftentimes the tricky part with this deck is you get stuck with the Kiki in your hand. There's usually only room for one Kiki Jiki in the deck. A lot of these decks are playing two of them just for some security, but you don't often want to draw that card. It's a 5-mana spell, and it's kind of an aggressive deck. And then you have to be careful with the Sling Gangs too, because you don't want to draw those. So you obviously want them in your deck so that the Harbingers can find them. So people are playing Leyline of Sanctity against me a lot of times because my discard spells are shut down. And then, of course, my win condition is shut down too because Sling Gang does target. But other options for the win condition, people are doing Pashalik Mons, which whenever a goblin dies, you deal 1 damage to a target. And then you combine that with Skirk Prospector that allows you to sacrifice goblins for red mana. So yeah. Kind of like a little two-shot there. It's a little more convoluted, but another way to do it.
Yeah, I mean, functionally, just for people who are like, well, how do you ever win if you can't get around Leyline of Sanctity? When you play the Boggart Harbinger line, what you can do is at the beginning of your opponent's end step, you can activate your Snoop as a Kiki Jiki and make infinite Snoops to attack with. Using the last Snoop to copy Boggart Harbinger and go get another Boggart Harbinger so you can put the Kiki back on top of your deck and keep threatening this every turn. But then you untap with 100 2/2s that have haste and you can attack with them and then they die at the end of turn.
You mean like at the end step so you can untap with them or what?
Correct, yeah. So Kiki Jiki set breathe at the beginning of the end step, sacrifice this token that you make. So you can make 100 Snoops, Boggart Harbinger for a Goblin Ringleader or another Boggart Harbinger. So you can play Harbinger to have the option to put Kiki Jiki back on top of your deck. So you never have to draw the bad 5-mana spell and always threaten the combo.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, because though the tokens come into play tapped, they can never attack if you were to do it during your main phase. But yeah, you can trick out the Kiki Jiki if you activate it at your end step. Yeah, there are a lot of kind of tricky things you can do with that, with Snoop. One of the things, and I've actually honestly never had problems beating the Leyline of Sanctity. It's definitely a thorn in the side, but the deck can do enough damage through attackers that it hasn't ever been an issue for me. Your opponent often has to mulligan a few times to find the ley line, and that's one fewer card in their hand, which means that it releases a little bit of the pressure for them to counteract your aggressive strategy if you're just going to go balls to walls attack. So if they're doing that, it's early on enough in the game where you can change your game plan entirely, where you're not like committing to this combo plan, like playing Snoop, using your tutor pieces for combo pieces, and then having to like change gears and go into an aggressive plan. But instead, you're like full on aggression from turn one. You can really, you know, attack. But I digress. My point was lots of funky things you can do. Snoop is really kind of clever. Your fetch lands can change the top of your deck. You can find some really kind of fancy things off the top, such as Skirk Prospectors to sacrifice your creatures when your, say, opponent's Bone Crusher Giant is targeting your goblins, and you want to basically negate half of that card. Just like really kind of like corner cases. But one of my favorites is my opponent plays Oriok Champion against me quite often because it has protection from red and black, right? Pretty much the worst card I can see. But Oriok Champion does not beat the combo. And oftentimes my opponents think it does because it gains a life when the tokens come into play. So the thing is, when a token comes into play, Oriok Champion's trigger goes on the stack. They gain a life. In response to that trigger, I activate my token copy to make another copy of it.
Yeah. You get the kill in response to the triggers.
Every time those triggers go on the stack, I'm making another copy. So I've got like 40 triggers on the stack when my opponent's got these, or 20 triggers on the stack, I should say, for their life gain. But before they ever resolve, I'm dealing 20 damage to them with my Sling Game Commander. So it's kind of cool. You do have to do one extra, though, because you will eventually have to put the last Boggart Harbinger into play. Anyways, we're getting to really specific stuff. I don't want to go that far. But
you're going down that hole. We are going to talk about bans and restrictions today.
But it is related because this is one of the cards that was talked about in one of the leaks as a possible card that was going to get the axe today. Boggart Harbinger was leaked from a quote-unquote reliable source that had correctly predicted bans in the past, saying that this card and Astrolabe were getting banned in Modern. And it affected the market.
Boggart Harbinger is just an inherently fair Magic card. It's a 3-mana, put a creature on top of your deck.
It is, but it's like, believable because it's a 2-card combo. And of course, Seth, probably better known as Saffron Olive, perpetuated this lie because he played the deck and got a 5-0 with it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Anyways. I mean, it's a 2-card combo that folds to a Stiff Breeze. Like, all you have to do is kill a single 2/2, and this whole thing falls apart.
Yeah, yes. It is like, a very...
I'm hard pressed.
It is very consistent. But you're right. It is... it takes removal to interrupt it. That's all. So, yeah, I would be very pissed if it got dismantled by a ban, especially at this point in time where I'm telling you I just took like 2.5 months off of Magic and this is the deck that brought me back to it and then the deck got banned. I would have a problem, but I'm glad that they made the right choice. Arkham's Astrolabe is gone in Modern. Good riddance. Anyways, there were two other ones that had really been talked about a lot, and this seems to come up like every time a banner restricted announcement comes around, but Splinter Twin, perpetually on the, you know, a big conversation every time. There was a quote-unquote leak on Birthing Pod being unbanned, too. Did you see that?
I did.
And, of course, neither of those came true, but both of them affected both cards, and there were spikes on both cards. So, if you are... have any mind for Magic Finance, you will know that you can make money anytime there's a banned restricted announcement just by purchasing and selling either one of those prior to and on the morning of a banned restricted update.
Possess them prior to the banned restricted announcement.
Yes.
Wait before and then sell them before the announcement goes
so over. Yeah, buy them now for next time.
Yes, correct. What do we want to look at? So we have stuff for Historic, Pioneer, Modern, and Pauper. We are not typically a Historic or Pauper podcast and talk a bunch about these things, but I'll read through them.
Yeah, real quick rundown.
Really. Yeah. Historic, Agent of Treachery is banned from Suspended. Winona, Joint Tour Forces is banned from Suspended. Fire's Invention is banned from Suspended. Nexus of Fate is banned. And Burning Tree Emissary is suspended. So, Corey, you looked up the definition of banned versus suspended. So if you want to tell the audience that, I'll kind of talk through it from a programmer perspective of why this makes sense. And then we can kind of move on.
Yeah, so notably, suspension is something that only happens for the Historic format. So suspension... this comes from mtggamepedia.com, so thank you for that. Suspension isn't a final verdict. It's an indication that R&D thinks a card may be causing issues and likes to see what the meta looks like without that influence. Suspension is also a temporary measure. All the cards that are suspended will be removed from the suspension list by or before the next event. So these cards were tested as a, you know, what would it look like if they were banned? Looks like they were happy with the results and they were then officially banned.
Yeah. I mean, all these cards can be pretty miserable. Winona, Agent of Treachery is miserable. Fire, as I mentioned, just cheats on mana. And we're basically in a standard environment. Nexus of Fate, very not a pleasant gameplay stylistic card.
Mm-hmm.
And then Burning Tree Emissary, they're saying, is a little too powerful for the format. But they do want to see what it looks like without it. So this is definitely something that I wish all formats had, even though it's not really possible, because everyone's like, well, we want to know what's on the watch list, because this feels like the watch list to me. They're like, all right, let's see what looks like. But they can go one step further and actually beta test and say, all right, we're beta testing this card not existing. Let's see what the results look like. And if we're happy with that beta test, if it does a good thing to the meta, we'll go ahead and just leave it gone. And if it doesn't, then we'll bring it back.
Why is it not possible?
Because of the secondary market and MTG Finance.
What? So I think they don't care about that. So they say they don't care about
that. They don't. They don't, but they have to realistically acknowledge what they would be doing to people. So, like, you pick an extremely expensive Magic card because I just don't know any right now off the top of my head.
Take, for example, Arkham's Astrolabe, which they just banned. What if it was just suspended instead? You know, what if they were just soft bans and then officially committed to the list if the results were acquired? Like, for example, Bridge from Below died for Hogak's sins, right? So if we were to, say, suspend Bridge from Below, and then, like, 3 months later we found out that it didn't solve the problem and it continued to be a problem, and then we were like, no, actually we have to ban Hogak, could we then say Bridge from Below is no longer suspended, we were wrong, this was the issue?
You could also just actually take it off of the ban list, which is why this is kind of...
It's kind of silly, but it's also like we can acknowledge that it's like we're not really sure. You know what I mean? Like, if something is so obviously the problem, it could go straight to the ban list. Like, we're like, holy shit. I don't know. I'm trying to think of like an example. Like, Eye of Ugin needs to go.
Yeah.
But
yeah, absolutely.
Suspended. Like, something's on the fringe, right? It's got a chance it could come off. Like, there's a chance that, I don't know, Oath of Nyssa, right? It's back in Pioneer. Like, that didn't need to get banned.
Right. So, like, the thing here, though, is with that happening in real life, you have to acknowledge the secondary market and the player experience of, like, okay, I spent this money on a deck, and I'm going to name a card that will never, ever, ever get banned. I spent $200 on a playset of Tarmogoyfs. And they suspend Tarmogoyf because vanilla creatures are OP. And this is the strongest vanilla creature for its cost. So we want to see what the format looks like without Tarmogoyf.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that puts me in a huge bind. I spent $200 on Tarmogoyfs. And now you've effectively made my Tarmogoyfs drop in price. But they could come back, so I can't recoup my losses to go try and build another deck to actually be able to play the format. Because then what happens if Tarmogoyf, they go, oh, it turns out vanilla creatures aren't OP, it's really creatures with effects, Tarmogoyf is unsuspended. Well, I had to sell my Tarmogoyf to try and build another deck because I don't have the disposable income to build a bunch of decks.
Yeah.
And now, instead of being able to go back and get my $25 Tarmogoyf back, I have to spend $100 in Tarmogoyf. Well, that just totally screwed me, and can I really play Modern? And so that's like a player experience thing that they have to like be very understanding and realistic about. On Arena, you use wild cards, and you can randomly pick up wild cards. You can get wild cards as a free-to-play player. Like, they can be slowly accumulated. Realistically, the acquisition of cards in formats like Modern, it's dollars and cents. You're not just randomly opening a standard pack and getting a Liliana in the Veil,
mm-hmm.
or a Tarmogoyf or something like that. So there is a reality that even though they don't acknowledge the secondary market, they have to really acknowledge the player experience with the secondary market.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, and I don't know how many times I can say it. I really hate the fact that decisions that affect players' abilities to play the game of Magic are so tied to like the monetary, you know, commitments to the game. And it's like that with everything, obviously. But there's
luxury hobby.
What?
Luxury hobby.
Luxury hobby. It really is, and it sucks that is in every version of this. And
yeah.
I'll continue to make my point that might as well be the case that we maintain that the paper version of this product, which has tons and tons of opportunities for collectability, for grading of card quality, for a history of like 25 years of collection, to like be like that, right? Like, I get that and I value that, and I have cards that are worth money and I like that, and I like having value and maintaining that value. But online, where things are digital, it doesn't belong, you know what I mean? And that's where I feel like that there needs to be like a separation, and I cannot wrap my head around the fact that there isn't, and that we have accepted blindly that that is the case. Just because the paper version of this card that has this scarcity and this allure to it in a physical product is valued at this thing, at this amount, it is acceptable for the ones and zeros, you know, imaginary version of it to be the same thing.
So Corey,
it's crazy.
We can have this discussion until we're blue in the face. We already know it.
All right, I got to bring it up over and over again. But here, moving on. Yeah. Okay.
Well, let's talk about banner strict things. We'll have let's schedule a podcast to come out and specifically talk about this and have it just be the rant podcast about it.
I don't intend on steering us there. All right. I just want to make that point.
I just want you to have a rant podcast where you can get it out. That way we don't have it just randomly come up again.
Yeah. All right. I hate it. All right. Okay.
So let's talk about Pioneer real quick. Blow through the things that we don't deal with normally.
Go ahead. Pauper. Gotcha. Go ahead.
Yeah. Pauper. So Pauper had Expedition Map and Mystic Sanctuary banned. Yeah. So prior to this banning, Gush, Taxing Probe, and Daze, basically the free, powerful blue spells that made tempo decks a thing, were banned in Pauper. And so was Astrolabe. So when they did that, it turned out that Tron was the best deck before, and it became even stronger because one of the natural predators of big mana Tron decks was put a Delver in play, Daze and counter your spells into Oblivion, moving on. Like, that was sort of the natural predator of that. So Tron, especially Tron that now has access to Mystic Sanctuary because it was mono blue and it played a bunch of islands, and then used Prophetic Prisms and tap lands to filter its mana. But Mystic Sanctuary, buying back Counterspell and things like that, and Ghostly Flicker and all sorts of different things, along with Tron just having consistency with Expedition Map, kind of giving this deck a tutor while no other deck really had a tutor. Those two things were kind of unreasonable to have happening and a little too oppressive for Pauper. So they took them out.
Yep. All right. I think that generally that's probably a good change. I know there's a lot of complaints about the Tron decks in Pauper being really powerful, but I think that players were looking more for like the, you know, for Tron being like just banned out of existence entirely with like the banning of Urza's Tower or something. But I guess this might be one of those cases where, like, you know, a suspension list might be appropriate for this type of format, you know? So I don't know. I'm not a Pauper player.
A little less financially stringent. But I just think Tron is totally fine to have. Cause like the problem is like, there's this big gulf of like casting a Wurmcoil Engine or a Karn Liberated on turn three is like, people can't really beat it. But, like, the scariest thing that's really happening on turn three in Pauper isn't really near that, right? You know, it's Muldrifter. You're using Tron to have – it's more like a Gifts Tron deck where you're using Tron to have this very difficult to beat end game instead of just, like, making it a non-game on turn three.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So, Pioneer.
Sure. Pioneer. You can go ahead and
– Oath of Nissa. Oath of Nissa off the banned list. Oath of Nissa was banned initially when the Saheeli Rye combo decks were around. They fixed the mana too well and just basically made smooth those decks out a little too well. Turns out that Saheeli Rye, Felidar Guardian needed to be taken care of in other ways, so this was not a problem on its own. It was also a piece of the mono green devotion decks. Turns out Leyline of Abundance was the big issue there. So Oath of Nissa, another casualty of some other card sins. And here it is, being freed for those causes. Oath of Nyssa, kind of a surprising card to be on any banned list. I think that now that those two pieces are gone from Pioneer, this will see some very modest play. It's likely going to be back in mono green devotion list because it is kind of a like a nice draw spell, quote unquote, in a green deck that also serves as a pip for Nykthos. But it's absolutely not going to like crush the format. So it's great.
Nope.
Cool.
So do you think have banned Inverter of Truth or Lotus Field or Underworld Breach, any of those?
Yeah, I don't know. I know. So, like, people are pretty down on Pioneer in general. I think that there's a lot of hate on the format, thinking that it's a very combo-oriented format. There is, like, Thassa's Oracle is, like, the primary win condition in the format between, like, Dimir Inverter decks and like, the Lotus Breach decks right now. And I think I'd agree with that. If you look at the meta shares, I mean, I'm looking on Goldfish right now. Dimir Inverter is represented at 17%. And I don't know how accurate this is because I'm still seeing like Naya Winota decks on this list as well. But that's a pretty big share.
That's actually something to point out, is that Pioneer has become so unpopular because of the state of the format right now that it's just not firing on Modo.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's just not firing. So if it's not firing, something's wrong. You need to listen to the people, your customer.
I mean, have you been playing Pioneer? Have you given it a shot in the last, like, I don't know, 5 months, 6 months?
No. No, ever since Thassa's Oracle came out, I haven't touched Pioneer. It's just like,
it's such a boring way to win. Dimir Inverter is just a boring deck.
It's not that it's a boring way to win. It's just that it's so efficient. There's not a particularly clean way to interact with it.
Yeah.
Is the problem. Like, you have to be playing counter spells. So, like, it forces you to play blue to interact with. And so, like, but why would you play blue-white control and have to try and win with, like, Teferi or Baneslayer Angel when you can just play Thassa's Oracle yourself?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I want to say, like, they have a bag of tricks to pull from to, like, excite people about the format when it comes to cards that they're printing, cards they can unban, cards that they can ban. And they absolutely did not utilize that in this case. Oath of Nyssa is not a card that people are like, oh, shit, we get this tool back. We can finally build Oath of Nyssa decks again. Maybe mono green will change the format slightly, but it's definitely not going to shake things up enough where Dimir Inverter is all of a sudden bad.
What's the cards that you're saying they could have unbanned to give you that feeling, Corey?
Perhaps there isn't one in Pioneer. I'm thinking more in like Modern. I feel like, you know, we're talking about like Splinter Twin and Birthing Pod. You know, there's all sorts of discussion to be had about whether or not those are viable for those formats. But I think more so in Pioneer, it's more like removal. You know, it's addition by subtraction. Like, getting rid of Thassa's Oracle from that format just forces players to find some other way to win the game. And I think that changes to huge decks in the format, and all of a sudden that allows for a lot of fair decks to basically come to life and say, wow, you know, we can do some things that like don't, that aren't forced to just like race these control and combo decks that are just able to like assemble this combination of, you know, Inverter, Oracle.
Yeah, as I say, control decks aren't the problem. It's these combo decks that get to play in this control shell that are functionally hurting here. And like,
I'm referring to Inverter.
Is it a problem? Sure, exactly, Inverter. So is it a problem, though, that if we ban Thassa's Oracle, do we also need to ban Walking Ballista? Because then Heliod plus Walking Ballista becomes our efficient combo deck of choice. Do we need to ban that, too?
I don't know. It's a good question. I'm looking at the statistics right now. Mono White Devotion is the fifth most played deck. It's 5.7% of the meta share. Like, Spirits is above it, Mono Black Aggro is above it, but the only other two decks above it are Lotus Breach and Dimir Inverter, so there's a good chance that it is then the strongest thing. So I don't know. I don't know what it takes. Like, the removal is pretty poor in Pioneer, and that might have a lot to do with it.
Yeah, I mean, we only have Fatal Push as far as super efficient removal.
Yeah. Honestly, whenever I play Pioneer, like, I either have fun or I just think that it's just, like, it's a miserable powered down version of Modern. Like, it's one of the two, you know? Like, the mana is slower, it's less efficient, it's less consistent, the removal's worse. But then at the same time, I get to play a lot of cool cards that don't fit into Modern. And so I'm either happy that things are, you know, I'm fortunate enough to not get screwed by the problems that the format has, and I get to enjoy those benefits to it, or the alternative is true, where you just get the misfortune of your land sequencing is all out of whack. You don't have the right removal against an opponent that's just going off with mono black decks. And I think it's more so the latter, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So, anyways.
I stand by my statement that functionally you want Pioneer to be a battle of Siege Rhinos.
Yeah, it's we're not there right now. Absolutely not. Niv to Light is an awesome deck. I love playing that deck. I think it's super cool. It doesn't play Siege Rhinos anymore. but that's not to say it couldn't. I think it could. But I think, like, that's a good representation of, like, where you want that format to be.
What, did Siege Rhinos eminently playable?
It's just like, I just think the Niv decks in Pioneer represent a collection of, like, value, and it's like the all-stars of, like, the era. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
And yes, and I think Siege Rhino is playable in that style of deck. It's like just all the best cards, you know, stretching through, you know, the era of Pioneer. So, I don't know.
Yep.
Anyways. Okay. So let's take a look real quick at, we talked about Historic, we talked about Pauper, we're on to Modern, yes?
I saved my favorite one for last, yeah.
Your favorite one.
Favorite one is, in I love this card and it makes me extremely sad, but it kind of had to go.
Yeah.
Arkham's Astrolabe was the only Modern banning.
Yeah.
And so they're talking about how, I think we talked about what's that percentage that requires something to get banned.
Yeah.
Looks like Wizards is saying 55%. Uh-huh. So variants of decks that contained the card Arkham's Astrolabe had 55% win rate against non-mirror match decks. So a deck not playing Arkham's Astrolabe. They're saying there's nothing bad with having multicolored good stuff decks, but they want there to have to be concessions for mana bases. So the problem that, you know, everyone was having with Astrolabe is that I could fetch all basics, never lose to Blood Moon, and cast Cryptic Command with a forest and a swamp in play. You know, like, that's the kind of stuff people were complaining about. Yeah. Or I could cast Palukrinos, people were casting that, but you could cast a double off-color spell with three islands so you could play Mystic Sanctuary on turn four.
Yes.
Stuff like that. It's also a cheap artifact, which was powered up the Urza deck, and had no cost functionally for the Urza deck because it drew you a card and it was an artifact that enabled Metalcraft, and I think Mox Opal really died for Astrolabe and not for Urza. That's a hot take, but I Mox Opal is a bad card to have exist because it pigeonholes certain things to be ahead of others, but I think Astrolabe was really the thing that kind of killed it. But they're just saying there's, you know, this thing does too much for too little cost. It mana fixes, it cantrips, it's an easily bounceable, flickerable permanent, and so because of that, they banned it, and they're keeping their eye on it in Legacy for similar reasons.
Okay, I've got a couple of questions for you. You're being interviewed now. The first one, this is a multiple choice question. Your three choices multiple are choice. A, yes, right. B, no, or C, laughter.
I get to explain myself?
Yes, of course. You have to answer first, and you can explain. So this card that I'm about to describe did not see really like any freaking Modern play prior to Arkham's Astrolabe. But my question is, does Prophetic Prism see more consideration as potentially playable in Modern, given that Arkham's Astrolabe has shown itself to be effective in the format and is not banned?
I'm not going to... Laughter is not my answer.
Okay.
Surprisingly. The answer is no.
Okay, Prophetic Prism, for the record, is a 2-mana Astrolabe that does not require snow mana. It's a common.
It's colorless. It's 2 colorless. Enters the battlefield, draw a card. Pay a mana, make a mana of any color.
Yeah. Correct. Same card.
So two is just vastly so much more than one.
Yeah.
So a lot of times these 3 and 4 color decks, the problem that they would have is why they were not as good in the meta and against the field is because their mana would have to be slow. Because they'd have to fetch a Triome or fetch a tapped Shockland. Like, back when I played that 5-color Narset nonsense pile deck, like, the mana was so bad because you only had 8 lands that came into play tapped and fixed your untapped and fixed your mana. Everything else was a fetch for a shock, and you had 3 basics. Like, your mana base was so bad that, like, you were going to either take 6 from your lands to play things on time, or you got lucky and drew the good half of your deck with the right lands. So, like... That's why that deck was wholly unplayable as Modern aged. And so we're kind of stepping back to that. Before, like, I could have theoretically revived that Narset deck, found 4 slots for Astrolabe, played some snow basics, and had a functional mana base in a deck that might actually have worked.
Yeah.
But that's not, you know, I didn't do that, and it was totally reasonable not to, because there's a bunch more broken stuff happening. But I don't think you can afford, because turn 2 is where those powerful multicolored spell decks are really starting to interact heavily with their powerful multicolored spells. I don't think that you can afford to take that turn and turn 1 off in Modern.
Right. Yeah. I think I would agree with that.
If H2 was legal in Modern, I think Prophetic Prism would see play.
If what? What was legal?
Ancient Tomb.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So that would be a very different looking deck, too.
Absolutely.
Now, so the difference between a 1-mana spell and a 2-mana spell, I would say, is far greater than the difference between a 2-mana spell and a 3-mana spell. Would you agree?
No, they all feel just as bad.
Nah, okay.
Because there are a lot of spells that are played. Like, would you play Tarmogoyf at 3-mana?
So there's got to be some kind of drawback. Like, the quote-unquote drawback to Arkham's Astrolabe is the fact that it costs snow mana, which we have found from experiment that it's not really a drawback at all. Like, any deck can and will play snow mana. It's what?
It's a drawback, but it's a trivial drawback.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the existence of fetch lands. So realistically, you know, people are like, well, just ban fetch lands and all these formats and butter because there's no shuffling. And I wouldn't disagree with that. Arkham's Astrolabe would have a non-trivial drawback if fetch lands weren't legal in Modern.
Right.
Another discussion for another day, but, you know, that the drawback was made trivial by the existence of fetching.
Yeah, I think the sequence of going turn 1 Astrolabe into turn 2 Ice Fang Codal is just, it's just too perfect. Whereas Prophetic Prism on turn 2 is just way too clunky when you want to be playing like Uro on 3. I don't think there's any chance in hell that those snow decks just shift to Prophetic Prism. Now,
I would agree.
The fact that that card has done so much, I think people now reconsider the value of such a thing fixing your mana. However, I don't think that it nearly, you know, functions in the same way. But
yeah, it's just too many.
Yeah. But I think that, like, you would have been laughed at in the past for playing Prophetic Prism, whereas now it's like, oh, yeah, I could see the value of that because I've seen so many people play Arkham's Astrolabe. You know, maybe a less experienced player would have that experience or that reaction. Okay, anyways, my follow-up question now is, Ice Fang Codal, is it nerfed to the point where it doesn't get played in Modern without Astrolabe?
I don't think so because, I mean... Like, let's look at the decks that were playing it and then analyze, well, what's going to happen to them? Because this is kind of a two-part question. I think the answer is no, it was not nerfed that it will see Modern play. It will still see Modern play. But realistically, how bad is your mana base? Mm-hmm. So decks like a Sultai Reclamation style deck that's mostly blue can fetch a bunch of snow islands, still support their Mystic Sanctuaries and turn on their Icewind calls. Soul Herder was another deck that I've got a lot of experience playing with. It didn't adopt Astrolabe really until after Yorion's release, and they were still playing Icewind Call. So like, if your mana pips aren't too poorly spread, then you can definitely make Icewind Codal still a reality.
Yeah.
But it's just like, if you're trying to expect yourself to be able to go like Seer and Visions into Icewind Codal into like double black spell, no, your deck's probably going to have to be redesigned. It won't be able to fit Icewind Codal on turn three with Snow Basics and your double black spell. So you're going to have to figure out what's like, going
to
give
him to Torak or something.
I was thinking like Liliana, Last Hope or something like that.
Okay.
Just generic idea.
Okay, something modern legal. Yeah.
Yeah, something modern legal. But like the kind of the understanding of like crossing all the way over into like double of another color. So yeah. Like I think the Bant Snowblade deck, like the that exists now, I think it will still exist and I think it will still play Icewind Codal.
Yeah.
I just won't have Astrolabe as a free thing to bounce with Teferi that also makes your mana much better. So like maybe those decks cut the forest because you only have 8 green cards. I don't know, man. Like that's the kind of shift you expect to see. They might go from like 5 island 1 plains 1 forest to 5 island 2 plains and just not cast Uro and Icewind Codal in the face of Blood Moon, and just might accept that that's a loss that they're taking. That's the kind of stuff I expect.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot worse. Having to have 3 basic lands in play for it to have Death Touch is a big blow to Icewind Codal.
Or two snakes.
I think Collected Company decks are probably in the best position to continue to play it. However, there really aren't any of those. That would be like maybe Collected Company Soul Herder decks.
Soul Herder decks typically stray away from Collected Company because they need a critical mass creatures and they have like Ephemerate and Force of Negation already.
Oh yeah.
So realistically, Collected Company doesn't really fit.
Okay.
Just because you have to have a certain number of creatures. But like, yes, anything with Collected Company is still interested in a 2/2, like a 2-mana flash creature that you could also flash in or Collected Company or, you know, do whatever you want to do. I still think that the control decks, like the blue-white control decks, I still think will still be interested in Mystic Sanctuary Uro, so I think it's just kind of free to play Icewind Codal along the way.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it'll be interesting to see. After playing a little bit of Modern the last couple of weeks, I've been pretty happy with the diversity of the format, to be honest with you. There's been a lot of different stuff. I've seen everything from, like, I've run into the Bant control deck, and honestly, it did seem a little bit obscene. It seemed to have everything, you know? But I've seen everything ranging from like there's a lot more dredge going around. I've seen quite a bit of like the green red mid range. There's a lot of aggro, mostly like the mono red decks. In fact, there's a lot of the mono red decks playing the 6-mana guy, the Chandra's Incinerator dude. I'm surprised to see that. Yeah. And I know Eldrazitron is out there because I've been hearing a lot of murmurings about the new 2-mana tome, the Maze Mind tome, showing up in Eldrazitron. Here, that's very good. Yeah. So there's a lot of different stuff happening in Modern. It's a pretty healthy place. So without the Sultai decks or the Bant decks playing that spell, Arcanum's Astrolabe, I hope that the effect of like a Blood Moon resurfacing doesn't suppress some of that diversity. And I'm concerned because Blood Moon tends to have that effect. And if the green red, like mid range Ponza decks are already strong, like those decks are just waiting in the wings, I think, don't you? And Goblins is a deck that can leverage the Blood Moon very well too.
Yeah.
It's a red deck.
That's just sort of... I just think it's sort of a thing we've accepted as a reality of Modern is that like there will definitely be these unfun cards like Blood Moon.
Yeah.
Like I don't think it's gonna stifle diversity. Like I don't think diversity will go away. But it will cause Blood Moon to be an actual piece of cardboard in Magic now instead of just like a Pokemon card that is totally irrelevant.
Yeah. Fair enough. Well, I'm excited to see what happens. A little bit apprehensive about Blood Moon coming back. Although I am a Blood Moon player myself, so I will be taking advantage of that.
I have a question for you about all this.
Yes.
Is there realistically a card? This is your question gets to be way more open-ended. Is there realistically a card that you expected to come off of or go onto the ban list in this ban cycle in Modern?
Like next time?
No, like with our ban cycle that we just went through.
Yeah.
Prior to saying Arkham's Astrolabe is legal,
yeah,
banned Arkham's Astrolabe and banned something else, or and unbanned something. Like, what is that card that you thought had a legitimate shot of going onto or coming off of the ban list?
Oh, like, was I expecting something else to happen, basically?
Correct.
No, I think I heard the arguments for Uro. I didn't think there was a chance in hell that Uro was getting banned. I heard arguments for unbanning Birthing Pod. I was willing to entertain that idea just because I wanted it to be true.
I didn't think
that was possible either. Okay. Splinter Twin is always a topic. I'm interested in entertaining that idea because I think that would be fun for a little while too. But
I think that's possible. I think Splinter Twin will never.
I think with both of those, that would give us something to talk about for about a week, and then afterwards we'd really regret those coming back. You know, like as much as I love Birthing Pod, don't get me wrong, that was my shit. When Birthing Pod was a deck, that was all I played. Like. Since then, I play a different deck in Modern like every week, and I go to my shop, or I used to go to my shop when it was open. I play a different deck every week. I go sleeve up a different thing. But when it was Birthing Pod, I played Birthing Pod for 3 years straight, and yeah. I enjoyed every minute of it because I could constantly tweak the pieces in it, and I got to know it really well. It was a fun deck to play, and I didn't think it was like problematic to the extent that it needed to get banned. But I don't think I was playing at like. I don't think I was playing enough high-level Magic to really feel that at the time, whereas I think I'd have a better grasp on that now. And I think that where we're at with Magic these days, like I think that the format is so fast that Birthing Pod would have a hard time. I don't know. It's hard to say. It really is. But I think that it's slow enough where it would probably be okay. But it would really punish the decks that can't find the answers to it quickly enough. And I think that it's probably not worth the experiment, to be honest.
And I'm just going to stake my ground here. Splinter Twin is never coming off of this modern
Yeah, Splinter Twin doesn't belong in this format.
It's not possible. And it's just because of so it's a turn four format, theoretically. So Splinter Twin meets that parameter. But the problem, there are two problems with it. The first is the printing of Teferi Time Raveler.
Yeah, if that guy.
Because Splinter Twin having Teferi in it means they can just like combo, just roll you with the combo at any point in time.
Yep.
After they put it in play. And then the second thing is just like the key to Splinter Twin is the timing restrictions that it can give you. So like red decks can't really functionally interact with it. We have Magnetic Sinkhole now, so you'd have to fetch a bunch to be able to interact with it on turn three, but then you're not doing anything proactive. And then like Tron decks kind of get completely destroyed by it. And then like the interactive decks, like if they try to do anything, like you've created a situation where one deck doesn't really get to play a game, and the other deck just gets to do something and threaten to end the game while just playing a normal game. So only one person is having a negatively impacted play experience, which is just not a thing that really can exist in Modern and have it be a healthy format.
Yeah, playing the Goblins deck actually gives me flashbacks to the Splinter Twin era because you got that feeling of, like, if you knew what your opponent was up to, you have that kind of showdown of, like, inaction where, like, you can't commit to doing anything safely when your opponent could Pester Mite and tap down like the resources you need to interact with their combo. And right. you basically just had to do nothing until you found enough lands to like advance your own game plan and then commit like five extra lands to like fend off counters and deal with their creature. You know what I mean?
Right. But the difference, and this is why I think the Snoop combo is totally fine and should never get touched.
Yeah.
Is that like you get two whole, like you get the turn Snoop gets cast to interact with it. So like you get a whole turn to interact with it. Whereas like your own turn where your mana untaps and is not restricted.
Uh-huh.
Whereas your opponent, like with Splinter Twin, your opponent could let you do something, constrain your mana more, and then just combo you immediately. You didn't get a chance to untap and interact.
Right, yeah, and you have counter spells, right? My thing with the Goblins deck, though, is it's an Aether Vial deck. So if your Vial's at 2 and you're threatening, like, if your Aether Vial's ever at 2, your opponent has to assume that you're going to be dropping a Snoop at the end of turn and then dropping a Boggart Harbinger on your turn, right? And if you don't, then you're as good as dead, because if they have it, you lose, right? If you do not allow for, like, a Fatal Push or similar, you lose.
Right, so now you're saying it's a 3-card combo. And if I have to, even if it curves out, if I have to beat a 3-card combo, that's like more realistic of like, sure. Okay, you have to have literally all of it. But like with Splinter Twin, it's so compact and easy to roll up and it has cantrips in it. So it's fixing its own draw to find what it needs to get to that point. Yeah, and it has two full turns to set it up to then like kick it off. Whereas with the Goblins combo, if you're opening 7 and then like maybe 2 draws, you just have to have it. You don't get to like look at the top 4 cards of your deck and go, oh, there it is. Put it on top, draw it. All right. Kill you.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm not necessarily comparing like the effectiveness of the combos. I'm just saying that the feeling is similar in that in a metagame where people are all informed on the function of the deck, you have to know that you cannot be tapping out against it in a scenario where you've got Aether Vial on 2. That's my point. And the same is true against Splinter Twin. It creates those board states where you cannot be tapping out when your opponent has the ability to, you know, flash in Pester Mite or Deceiver Exarch.
Sure.
And go off. You have to assume that they have it if they have a card in their hand, and you have to assume that they're going to draw Splinter Twin, because if you don't, they will and they'll win.
Sure. I just think that it's worth noting that I don't think that these two things are comparable based on the fact that you're saying that that functionality exists if they have an extra card on top of it. And if they don't have that extra functionality of having flash, then you do get a whole turn cycle with your own mana untapping to be able to interact with this thing.
Yeah.
And if you didn't build your modern deck to kill a 2/2, you've got a whole other problem. And if you didn't draw it, like you know that this format has creatures with 2 toughness in it. If you didn't keep a hand that could kill a 2-mana 2/2, when the majority of the decks have creatures, then you kept a bad hand.
Sure. Okay. All right. So long story short, TLDR, Splinter Twin not getting unbanned in Modern anytime soon. I don't want it. I want to talk about it. I want to have 1 week where we can say, wow, sweet, Splinter Twin's back. These are the things you can do with it. This is what it's going to do to the metagame. But then I don't want to actually feel the effects of that ever. So if we could do the opposite of a suspended list, where we get the tested out list, where we get 1 week to just like play with that reality, and then we can be like, no, that was a terrible idea. We'll never do that. I'd be okay with that. Sign me up.
Sure.
So, all right. Anyways.
On the band and restricted announcements, do you have anything else?
No.
About them?
No.
I think we found a good place to stop for the day then.
Yeah.
But you want to schedule that rant about finances?
Yes. We'll do it next week. Too. We'll plan on something like that next week, but if something crazy happens between now and then, which it tends to do in the world of Magic the Gathering, we might have to change our plans. So be flexible. All right, please. Dude. Talk to you later.
Modern Metacall is a production of CarnockLife.com, where you can find a selection of MTG content, both written and recorded. Looking for deck primers? We've got them. Interested in videos? Try our CKL Play series, where we take the most interesting decks appearing in published results for a spin through MTGO leagues. We've got a team of talented writers specializing in a variety of formats and archetypes. To keep up with Card Knock Life offerings, you can follow us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/CardKnockLifePodcast. Thanks is due to ManaTraders.com, MTGCast.com, and TheDiscard.com for their support in making this possible, and thank you for listening, commenting, sharing, and reading Card Knock Life content.